I'd like to call to order the November 28th meeting of the Oak Ridge Board of Education. I'd like for us to please stand first, and we'll offer the pledge to the flag. But before we do that, I'd like to ask each of us to take a moment of silence and keep in our hearts those families, staff, and students at Woodmore Elementary School in Chattanooga, Tennessee, as they're going through some very difficult times in that school's life and those families' lives. So let's have a moment of silence for them, please. Thank you, and I would introduce Dr. Sherry Fairchild-Kies, who will introduce our very special guest for tonight.
Thank you, and good evening. I am so proud to introduce to you our second grade students who will be performing tonight under the direction of Michelle Gothard, our music teacher. And what you'll hear tonight is two wonderful songs from our Veterans Day performance, and I know you'll be pleased.
Attention, salute, and pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Oh,
once again the best part of our meeting tonight. Let's give them another big round of applause. We're going to start right here on the front row as you go out. And if you'll walk right up to this microphone and look right in the camera and tell us your first and last name, it's your chance to be on TV, okay? I don't want to scare you. Thousands and thousands of people are watching, okay? But don't be scared, okay?
My name is Yasmin Foltz.
My name is Serenity Mary.
My name is Morgan Lund.
My name is Skyler Smith.
My name is Kaylee Broom.
My name is Haley Dimmer.
My name is Isaac Johnson.
My name is Damon Little.
My name is Ian Culverson.
My name is Adeline.
My name is Willow.
My name is Mark.
My name is Kira Hertwig.
My name is Alec Weaver.
My name is Noah Baker.
My name is Blade Fannin.
My name is Tyler.
My name is Damian Thomas.
My name is Paloma Tenorio.
My name's Nevaeh Bailey.
My name's Madison Williams.
And this is Aaliyah.
And Ms. Gothard, thank you so much for what you do, and thank you for getting these kids here on a Monday after a vacation. So thank you very much. Next item on our agenda is the approval of the agenda. Do I hear a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Marshall, seconded by Ms. Eagle. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Next on the agenda is our good news segment. And Mr. Eby, we will start with you.
My good news comes from Glenwood. Third grade students demonstrated their creativities with the annual Pumpkin Book Reports project. And also, fourth graders will participate in the physical education activity of bowling at the Oak Ridge Bowling Center. Not only will the students learn the rules and techniques of bowling, but they'll also use their math skills to calculate their own scores during practice each week.
Ms. Eagle.
From Linden, Linden was selected as a 2016 Good Sports Always Recycle winner. The school was awarded $1,000 for its outstanding program and recognized as one of the top 10 programs in the state of Tennessee at the November 5th University of Tennessee versus Tennessee Tech football game in Knoxville.
My good news comes from Jefferson Middle School. Brian Smith, seventh grade teacher, has been chosen as the lead instructor for a project at the University of Tennessee. This project will take place during the 2017 calendar year and is part of the Improving Teacher Quality Grant, leveraging geospatial technologies to advance secondary teacher content and pedagogical knowledge. Ms. McClain.
Okay, my good news comes from the preschool. I met with Ms. Downard and reviewed over their annual self-assessment that they just completed this week. And I just am so impressed. They've done a great job in involving all their stakeholders and doing this assessment. They've developed some broad goals for the next five-year period, including a new curriculum and assessment tool and ongoing family education and support. It's a great program, and I feel good about our leadership in the preschool. I also have Robertsville, but I need to look on.
Sure. Hang on.
I'm having computer difficulty.
Oh, hang on. I skipped past it. There it is.
Garfield Adams and D.T. Hobby and Marty Miller attended the 2016 Tennessee LEAD Conference in Nashville in October, presenting middle school critical intervention at the most critical time. And that's good news from Robertsville.
Ms. Marshall.
Yes. And I have good news from the high school. First off, congratulations go to our boys and girls cross country teams. At the Region 2 Cross Country Championships, the girls finished in fourth place and the Oak Ridge High School boys finished as region champions. Congratulations for the third year in a row. So, wow. Guinevere Schwartz and Jake Etheridge both qualified for the states as individuals. So, congratulations to our cross country team. Also from Oak Ridge High School, our Oak Ridge High School art students competed in the TVA Student Art Competition in September. Waverly Mullins was awarded Best Ceramics, and Katie Roach won Best Print and second place for 10th grade. Oak Ridge High School, third item from Oak Ridge High School. We've got a bunch of great news from Oak Ridge High School. The high school student council raised over 8,000 pounds of food for Second Harvest Food Bank during their food drive in November. Also, Catherine Fulcher was selected as a finalist for the U.S. Senate Youth Competition this year. 10 finalists across the state were chosen, and the top two will represent Tennessee and Washington, D.C. this spring. Five Oak Ridge High School students were selected to participate in the All East Tennessee Honor Choirs at Maryville College, November 17 through 19. Aaron Bevan, senior at Oak Ridge High School and a violinist, represented the Oak Ridge High School Orchestra Program in the state of Tennessee as a member of the United States National Symphony in Dallas, Texas. He was one of only 12 violinists from America and from across the country that earned the spot, so congratulations, Aaron. And finally, Oak Ridge High School junior and a young lady I know personally, so congratulations, Savannah Ward has qualified for the Junior Dream Olympian team in archery. You watch out for her. She's tough stuff. So, yeah. And that's the good news from Oak Ridge High School.
And I'm going to add one hot off the press item to that. Oak Ridge High School student T. Higgins was selected for the second year in a row as Mr. Football in Classification 5A for the state of Tennessee. So that's a great accomplishment, and congratulations to T. Dr. Borchers, some more good news.
And excellent. If you haven't heard, the Oak Ridge School District has been ranked number one in the state of Tennessee in the NCHE 2017 Best School Districts. This ranking is based on a rigorous analysis of key statistics and millions of reviews from students and parents using data from the U.S. Department of Education. Ranking factors included state test scores, college readiness, graduation rates, SAT, ACT scores, teacher quality, and overall public school district rankings. The Oak Ridge schools received a grade of A+. All of our schools fell in the A range, and Oak Ridge High School was ranked number three in the state for best high schools, only behind two magnet schools, Hume Fog and Central Magnet Schools. So this is a wonderful recognition of the great things and the great things that our teachers and administrative leaders are doing and working with students. So very proud of that.
And that's just some of the good news that's going on in the Oak Ridge schools. Next on the agenda is the public forum. The public forum is for anyone who would like to address a topic that is not on the agenda. You may address a topic that is on the agenda when it is presented. If you choose to speak now to address the board, you will have 3 minutes to speak. The board may or may not respond to your comments or may have the superintendent address your concerns. When you speak, please come to the podium, sign in, and then state your name and address for the board. Is there anyone who wishes to address the board at this time? Mr. Lee.
My name is Joseph Lee, 99 East Pasadena Road, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and I'm here to thank you again. My youngest daughter, Lindsay, just finished her master's at UT last May, and now she's got a job in France teaching French, or teaching English to the French. And she's also a liaison, an American representative in the school system there. So I'm very proud of that, and I thank you for it. Her older sister, Lindsay, just got her second degree from Oxford University last year, the day after the attack in Paris. She got a master's in statistics. This last November 5th, she got a master's of public policy, and I appreciate it. Good job. Public schools are a good thing. Thank you.
Thank you, and we appreciate your support, and thank you for allowing your daughters to attend Oak Ridge Schools. Anyone else? Seeing no one else, we'll move on to the consent agenda. Do I hear a motion?
So move.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Eby, seconded by Ms. Agel. All those in favor of approving the consent agenda signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next, we'll move to items for action. And once again, if there's anyone in the audience who wishes to address any of these items as we go through these topics, if you'd please identify yourself by just raising your hand, we'll give you an opportunity to do that. We'd have the same time frame as you would in the public forum. Also, would mention two things to the board. First, at our last meeting, we had a policy that we were discussing that was our drug testing policy. And until we could obtain additional information from our attorney, that policy was on the table. That policy still remains on the table because we have not yet received information back from our attorney. So it will stay there. Also, the board took a look at how we have been addressing our policies, and we've got several of them we're going to deal with tonight. I would remind the board, based on our decision, that if after each policy that is a first reading, if the board or a board member wishes to suspend the second reading, we can do that at this time. If not, then that policy will come back at our next meeting for the second reading. So I will probably ask after each of these, after we've voted on first reading, if there is a request for suspending the second reading. So, under items for action, the first one is Board Policy 2.601, Fundraising Activities, a first reading. Dr. Borges.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of the TSBA recommended updates to Board Policy 2.601, Fundraising Activities.
For the superintendent's recommendation, do I hear a motion?
Second.
Motion made by Ms. McClain, seconded by Ms. Marshall. Dr. Borges.
Yeah, you'll notice that these are TSB recommendations, and there's a change in the very beginning of this policy, and then there's some additions at the end of the policy that Dr. Henderson and Ms. Gagliano worked on.
Comments or questions from the board? Ms. Marshall.
Yeah, just a couple of questions. So page one, I guess it's item two, down at line 11 and 12. Fundraising companies and other salespersons shall obtain permission in writing from the superintendent or designee's office. How will that work
for salespeople working for companies that say the boosters want to engage or that an individual teacher wants to engage, do all those salespeople have to work through your office before they can be invited in? Or how's, because there's a lot of booster organizations and individual teachers who work directly with companies for fundraising. How will that work?
Mr. Lake Heron, do you want to kind of talk about our process for that?
Basically what happens is schools request permission to do a fundraiser. They fill out a form with all the information. It comes to my office, and basically I approve it. If there's not enough information there to answer the question adequately, basically we contact the school and seek further information.
Okay, so before any individual within the school system even reached out to a company, then they would receive approval to conduct the fundraising period?
No, they would actually at the school level be contacting different vendors and deciding who they want to go with. It's very common. I'm still getting lots of emails about fundraising because I was a principal for years. So principals, coaches, even teachers, and in many cases they have a vendor they've used year after year and have had good success. They continue to work with them. So they have the option of selecting the vendor they will work with. So.
Okay. And we feel like this does a good enough job, that there's enough other practices in place that there's clarity.
I would say yes. I mean, I can tell you that I'm not aware of any issues we've had in the Department of Fundraising. It always goes well. Our biggest question is normally student safety, and we have discouraged door-to-door sales over the years and trying to alleviate that just for student safety.
Okay.
Additional questions? Ms. Agle.
Well, the online fundraising section is new, and I guess there's a couple of different questions on that one. One is that some of our existing fundraisers have an online component. I think that the orchestra has typically done a catalog type sale, but people have the option to purchase online rather than writing a check and sending it in with the student. Would that generate any additional approval needed if it's part of, or I know the Band Fruit does the same thing, you can order Band Fruit online. Would that require additional approval, or is that because it's part of an existing thing that's okayed, would it still work?
Currently, we have not asked for additional approval in that area, and it's like the band, the fruit sale, they've done the fruit sale for well, many years, and I can recall, but you know, everyone's moving in that direction to offer online, and you know, and if you look at my situation, I have a lot of family in Louisville, Kentucky, and it made it really much easier for them to participate in the Elk Ridge High School band fruit sale by having the online component. So it doesn't seem to be causing any additional issues once we get the appropriate instructions out there how to do that. But anyway, it seems to be working well, and really it makes it easier on the students overall. So.
And would this also apply? I know that we have had teachers undertake fundraising activities to purchase materials for their classrooms. They're not necessarily soliciting from parents, but they are raising money to purchase items for their classrooms. Would this impact them?
I can't think of a way it would impact them. They're still seeking funds, even though we're using different avenues, so they can still use those funds, you know, in a manner they see fit. Of course, it has to meet the guidelines. So,
the only thing I can think of is some of those GoFundMe accounts or whatever those were. So that might be a good follow-up question for us on how those are approved and should that be on the form that we're currently using. So perhaps by the time we bring this the second time, we can tell you how we do that administratively to make sure we're capturing all those.
Okay.
Does that make sense, Mr. Lee?
It does, yes.
I think the important thing is it needs to follow the policy, though. Mm-hmm. You know, the process that we have.
We have the Uniform Accounting Manual that we brought to you earlier in the year, and that's really the guideline for all financial activities, and this states in here that it has to coincide with those practices. So in addition to what you said, we may want to go ahead and make sure that those specific policies are referenced in the sheet that they have to fill out and get permission with so that they're aware of them.
That's maybe the biggest thing, is making sure that all of the teachers are aware of what the rules are.
So I think this would be a good admin council conversation tomorrow as well. Maybe we'll add another item, but we can surely report back by the time this comes back to the board on how we're dealing with that administratively.
Yeah,
Ms. Marshall.
Yeah, just an observation. That seems to relate to item one, which is that fundraising can't fund anything that's a responsibility of the public, quote unquote, there. That feels like a very, anyway, that's a very broad, and when we get into classroom fundraising and things like that, that feels very gray. So clarity there would be helpful, for me anyway.
I will add to that, much of the fundraising at this point is just basically trying to provide a service for our students to raise funding for some of the trips that are quite expensive, like band and orchestra chorus. So I think the day of using it actually for classroom materials, that type of fundraising is probably very limited. If not, it could possibly be non-existent. So.
Any other questions? Motion on the floor is on first reading, approval of board policy 2.601, fundraising activities. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. And since there were some questions, as indicated, that would need to be brought back to the board, we won't even move forward with asking for a suspending of a second reading.
Mr. Chairman, before we do go forward, I think it would be important to explain to the people why we made the decision or talked about why we wanted to have the second reading most likely the following, unless there's a urgency to do it the first one. And Ms. Eagle brought this, and I thought it was a very good point to give the public more time to think about it and ask questions and talk about it. And I think we talked about more the exception that we would suspend it if it were something that required urgency. I just thought it helped.
Right. And that's the explanation of why we did it. Okay. B, board policy 3.500, food service management. This is the first reading. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of the TSBA proposed policy, board policy 3.500, food service management.
For the superintendent's recommendation, do I hear a motion?
Move for approval.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Eby, seconded by Ms. McClain. Dr. Borchers.
As you can see, this is a new policy to the Oak Ridge schools, and specific questions can be directed to Karen at this point.
Questions from the board? Ms. Eagle.
Well, the very first line is the school nutrition program shall be operated on a nonprofit basis. Does that preclude us from contracting food service to a for-profit company?
No, because it's actually referencing our funds, because we're paying them to manage our funds. So I think that's the separation.
Ms. Marshall.
Yeah, I had a question about the students requesting modified meals portion. Is allergen accommodation covered in a different policy, or should it also be covered here? Because an allergen isn't technically classified as a disability, but it is something that we need to be prepared to make accommodation for. Like peanut allergy, gluten intolerance, things like that.
I know that the food service company does keep really good records on all of that and works with each school. And does make allowances for that. I'm not sure if it would be considered under the modified meals section of this or not.
Could we follow up on that just to ask the question, make sure that we are noting that somewhere in the policy, because
sure.
This is a different category of accommodation, I think, than allergen and things. So,
okay.
Thank you.
On the down at the bottom, collection of unpaid meal charges, where have we been in the past as far as, the last line says it could be categorized as an operating loss. Do we get to that point?
We have taken measures so that each school is responsible for collecting or having some kind of a fund to help pay for those fees, because according to the law, the food service account cannot pay for the uncollected expenses revenue. So what would happen is we would have to use the general fund to make that payment.
That's kind of where I was going. We can't,
yeah.
They can't incur a debt on our part, even though it is a debt on their part.
Right. Because we participate in the National School Lunch Program, we have to adhere to the fact that the school food service fund can't pay for these uncollected fees.
Mr. Eby.
Yeah, my question was actually in the same sentence. It says, upon recommendation of the superintendent designee, the board may classify delinquent debt as bad debt. Is that a board action, and would we only do that in total, or is it expected that the board would evaluate each debt that's uncollectible and call it as bad debt? I mean, to me,
I would think it would be in total.
Yeah.
That would be very tedious for you to have to deal with that.
Right. I mean, just, I don't know if there's anything we need to clarify there or not, that it's at the end of the year, we may have a summation of all the bad debts or something like that. And I mean, that would be the way to do it.
Okay. I can look at that.
Other questions? Hearing none, the motion on the floor is approval of Board Policy 3.500, Food Service Management, first reading. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. With some additional information needed, we will then move on to item C, Board Policy 4.207, English Learners. This is also a first reading. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of the TSBA recommended updates to Board Policy 4.207, English Learners.
You've heard the superintendent's recommendation. Do I hear a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Marshall, seconded by Ms. McLean. Dr. Borchers, comments?
Numerous changes here. I'll turn to Dr. Beckendorf for some of the tough questions here, but we do have a change in the title of our students.
Questions from the board, or did you have some comments initially?
I'll wait for your questions.
Okay. Ms. Marshall.
Yeah, I just had one question on this one. On the second page, parental notification, there's no designation of what language parental notification would happen in, and I would think we would have an obligation to do it in the parent's first language.
We do communicate in the parent's first language when they are not able to communicate in English. So there are parents who are able to communicate in English, and so it's by parent choice. So if a parent is not able to communicate in English, then we do have a translator who helps us with our Spanish-speaking parents. And if not, a lot of times we use online translating services. So it's not perfect, but it's a lot closer than English is. Yeah. So yes, we do communicate in the home language.
Yeah, I would love to see that as a part of the policy, just for clarity's sake.
Oh, okay. Absolutely. Yeah.
Ms. McLean was next, I believe.
I was just wondering, how many students do we have that are ELL, and how many staff do we have providing this program? And how long does it take for a student to become proficient?
Okay, great questions. We have about 150 English learners. That's the new phrase, by the way. First, previously it was English language learners, and now it's English learners, so it's changed. We have about 150 English learners. That is a combination of students who receive direct services, meaning they see their ESL teacher directly, and students who are in transition. So they're transitioning from direct services to not requiring support. We have 5 ESL teachers. We have 1 full-time teacher at Glenwood, at Woodland, and at Willowbrook. We have a teacher who is shared between Linden and Robertsville, and we have a teacher who is shared between Jefferson and the high school. The amount of time it takes depends upon if the student is literate in their first language. So students who are literate in their first language generally take between 2 and 4 years to essentially exit from our direct services.
if a student is not literate in their first language, or if a student has had limited or interrupted formal education, then it can take much longer. And it's important to note that now at our high school, we are receiving students who have had limited or interrupted education before they came to us, or who may not be literate in their first language. So we're having some challenges with that at the high school. But our students who come in who are literate in their first language, then they usually take about 2 to 4 years.
Ms. Agle.
My question is much simpler. When we've been through three different labels for this, it was English as a second language, English language learners, English learners. Most of us think that all of our students are English learners. Why the constant change of label?
I don't know. But I'm being a good soldier.
Ms. Marshall.
Yeah, just one question related to Mrs. McLean's. How does that 150 break out across elementary, middle, and high school? How many of those students are in high school?
I'd have to bring you the exact numbers. Obviously, we have more at the schools that have full-time ESL teachers, because the way that we assign our teaching staff is based upon student numbers. A lot of our kiddos who start at the elementary level, by the time they get up into secondary, they have exited from direct services. So we tend to have a little bit fewer at the secondary level for that reason, because they've learned what they needed to learn in elementary. But I can get you some exact numbers by next time if you'd like them.
Mr. Eby.
I think I recall Ms. Marshall last time asked some questions about once a student is over 18 years of old with age with regard to notifying the parents. Is there any issues there? It says the student's parents shall be notified if they're officially an adult.
That's a good point. We can make that modification.
And that's part of the question we're asking our attorney to look into, and I think all of you can realize what change and how many changes we'd have to our policy should we have to insert some language. But Larry knows that question's out there. Dr. Henderson's working with him, so hopefully by January we can get you a response to that.
Other questions?
Can I just add one thing?
Yes.
We are so fortunate in our district to have some incredibly phenomenal ESL teachers. And I just wanted to give a minute to recognize them. We are very, very fortunate to have them. And they do amazing things with our kids. And our kids bring some great diversity into our school system. And they do a great job getting them prepared for their mainstream classes in English. Just want to give them a little shout out.
Absolutely. Motion on the floor, first reading, board policy 4.207, English learners. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next, we'll move on to item D, board policy 4.700, testing programs, a first reading. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of the TSBA recommended updates to board policy 4.700, testing program.
For the superintendent's recommendation, do I hear a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. McLean, seconded by Mr. Eby. Dr. Borchers.
As you can see from the policy, much of this pertains to the EOC changes in the law, but I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Beckendorf if she wants to give a brief intro to the discussion here.
The main reason for this change has to do with the TN Ready results. So currently, our EOC results from last school year are embargoed, so we are not able to discuss the results at this time. But the state of Tennessee has already released the state results from the high school EOC from last year. And as expected, the proficiency rates from the different high school end of course exams are lower for the TN Ready than they were on the previous assessment. It's important to note that that is because these are new tests based on new standards, so it's really apples and oranges to compare them to the previous assessments. However, because there is an expectation of lower proficiency scores on TN Ready assessments, the state has moved to make them have less of a weight on students' grades as a transition. So for this school year, 10% of the students' second semester average of a year-long course would come from the TN Ready results. Next school year, that would be 15%. And the third school year, it says no more than 25%. I definitely feel that they will close that loophole on the no more than 25%, in that right now they're saying that we could make it 2%. I'm sure they'll figure that out by that time. But anyway, the purpose of this particular modification is just to say that the state is aware that results are expected to be lower this year than in previous years based on previous assessments, and they don't want it to hit students' grades as hard.
Ms. Eagle.
I have several problems with this one. The first being, this would replace a policy that we just passed a few months ago. Second is, the new policy repeatedly uses TCAP, where we no longer have a TCAP test. Now it's a TN Ready. We should change it to just say state standardized test, in case they change the name again. The section on the second page, starting with line 9 down through line 16, you were talking about the TN Ready tests, that we need to lower what it would count this year and then gradate it. But on the policy that we're looking at, it says high school end of course exam scores, whereas our current policy, I don't think, incorporates the end of course exam scores, does it?
Okay, so here's where it gets confusing. So TCAP, I would use, is a big word like this. Okay, so TCAP is a big umbrella. A subset of TCAP would be the end of course exams, which would apply to high school subjects. So TCAP does encompass end of course exams. TCAP also encompasses TN Ready. So TN Ready has typically been thought about to be the math and English portion of what we would call TCAP. Now the state's making that a little more confusing, and I like your idea, because the recent communication they sent out, they were calling all of it TN Ready, including science and social studies, which was never included in TN Ready previously. So because of that confusion, I think you're making a great idea to say something general like state standardized assessment. Because of this confusion with TCAP, EOC, TN Ready, I really like that idea.
Well, and the other thing that I find troubling is that we have historically, when required to count these as part of a student's grade, kept it at the minimum, which was 15%. And I can understand, yeah, we want to adjust it to 10% this year because it's a new test and that sort of thing. I don't even want to put 25% in here unless and until we're required to do that. Unless the board wanted to consider a modification such that the test would count as the minimum required unless it helps the student's grade, in which case it could be 25%. But I'm not comfortable with having this gradation in here when we're not currently required to do that.
Okay, so could we just remove bullet C? Would that...
Yes.
Would that be better? Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the at this point, the change we're making is removing bullet C and changing on line 1 of page 2, changing where it says weighting of TCAP and EOC scores to what title are we going to put there?
Can we have just a comment there? Would it be possible for us to seek counsel on how we label this in the policy? And the only reason I say that is that when it comes to a policy like that and the legality of it, how you term it and what we're held accountable for are directly linked to one another. And I'm wondering if we need to go through the policy where we reference either TCAP or end of course, or we use all those specific terms and make sure we're using the right term in the right place based on the state's definitions rather than imposing our own big broad term. I'm just not sure what that signs us up for longer term. So could we just comb this one last time for terminology and make sure that, and maybe get our legal counsels on that and from TSBA? And I hate being a stickler, and at the same time, this is one of those that I think if the state's terminology and their communications are confusing, then it just creates more and more confusion.
I think we can certainly do that. It is Tennessee Code annotated language, so I think that's why we probably should take that next step you're talking about.
And before it gets passed permanently, you may want to check the footnotes that lead to the various statutes, because the ones that are on here are not always correct. On that particular section, page 2, starting with line 9, that has footnote 6. And that particular statute is about public notice of tests. So I think they meant for that one to reference 4, which is 49.16.17. That's the law about test counting as part of the course grade. And the current law on the books only applies to grades 3 through 8, the one that's referenced by TCA 49.16.17.
Go ahead.
I have the issue of the parental consent on this one as well that we'd need to fold in with all those other questions.
Do you wish to make, Ms. Agle, a motion to amend by removing bullet C?
Yes.
Do I have a second on that motion?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Eby. Any discussion on that motion to amend by removing bullet C? If not, then all of those in favor of amending board policy 4.700 by removing bullet C, which would be line 14 through 16, signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Any other comments on the policy itself? Good comments. Of course, you know we're liable to get all of this, as you said, combed out, and then we'll have to probably recomb again. But best recomb and not get ourselves in a situation that we don't need to be in. So, first reading, board policy 4.700. All those in favor, signify by, as amended, signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Moving on then to item E, board policy 5.302, sick leave. This is a first reading as well. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of the TSBA attorney suggested clarifications to board policy 5.302, sick leave. And you can see the attached for further information.
You've heard the superintendent's recommendation. Do I hear a motion?
Move for approval.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Agle, seconded by Ms. Marshall. Dr. Borchers.
As you know, we passed this earlier about a month or two ago, and then as we reported that to TSBA, there was a little bit of conversation there. So we thought it best if Mr. Giordano and Mr. Torres had a discussion so that we could get the language exactly the way we needed it and the way we wanted it here in Oak Ridge. So that's what you're seeing updated here in this policy.
Questions? Ms. Marshall?
Yeah, the same question I always ask when our teachers are directly involved. Have we vetted with the Oak Ridge Education Association?
We have. Mr. Steve Reddick is nodding out there. So, yes, we have.
Other questions or excuse me, or comments? Motion on first reading, board policy 5.302, sick leave. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Do we want to bring this one back?
I would move that we suspend second reading since this is functionally the second reading tweaked a little bit.
Motion is made to suspend the second reading on this policy. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Ms. Marshall. Any discussion? Motion is to suspend the second reading and pass on the second reading is what that would do. Board policy 5.302, sick leave. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion carries. Item F is board policy 6.505. This is a first reading, students in foster care. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of the TSBA recommended board policy 6.505, students in foster care.
Per the superintendent's recommendation, do I hear a motion?
Move for approval.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. McLean, seconded by Ms. Marshall. Dr. Borchers.
As you can see, this is a brand new policy for Oak Ridge Schools, so we have vetted this. Dr. Henderson has reviewed for the first reading this evening.
Questions from the board?
I have a question.
Mr. Eby.
In the transportation section, it gives three options with regard to providing transportation. It says the district will provide such transportation if one local child welfare agency agrees to reimburse the district, two, the district agrees to pay for the cost, or three, the district local welfare agree to share the cost. Who in the district determines on whether we pay for that cost or not, and how is that done?
We would, I am the person that's over the foster care. So we would look at how much the transportation is going to be and get with the agency that has custody of the child, bring that to Dr. Borchers, and then we kind of go from there. This is a brand new policy. So it reads similar to our homeless one. And so it depends on if the child is coming from, let's say, outside of Oak Ridge, that was an Oak Ridge child that started with us, for whatever reason was placed into foster care in a school system outside of Oak Ridge. If we wanted to keep the child or if it's in its best interest to stay, then we would arrange prorated transportation with the other school district for the transportation and the agency.
I understand. I'm just trying to understand who would approve the district to pay for that. It says the district, if the district agrees to pay for the cost, is that the superintendent? Is that the board? Is that you?
It wouldn't be me.
It looks like line 15 yes. Before those items.
Is this
says
the superintendent? Yes. Yeah. Show development. So I would bring the that information to the superintendent, and then we would go from there.
Ms. Eagle.
I can certainly understand where we have Oak Ridge students, kids who were already our kids, who may be placed in a foster family outside the city. That's not a problem. But it's not clear to me that there's any distinction for a child who was outside the city and may be awaiting placement or placed with someone else outside the city. This makes it look to me like they would be welcomed in, and I'm not sure that we want to do that.
Now, the way I read it, it would be if we had a child that, and we rarely have children that come to us that and placed in foster care that are not placed within a family. We have certain families that are designated by the agencies for the foster care children. If they come from outside Oak Ridge, they come into Oak Ridge and we get the information. I call it an educational passport. It has everything on it from special ed records to immunizations and so forth. That's what we use to get the child enrolled. And once we do that, then we kind of move forward from there. It says in the best interest of the child, so I can't see a child sitting out in another county that's not ours trying to come into our system, unless they were looking at foster placement within Oak Ridge. But again, we only have, I would say, a handful of families that are our foster care families that take children in. And we have, we work with DCS, and we also work with Omnivision. So we have several agencies that we work with, and we do that. And they try to keep siblings together and kind of go from there.
Yeah, so I can imagine that there would be circumstances that we wouldn't have visibility to that an agency might, and I would prefer to leave that call to the agency. If an mm-hmm. agency in charge of a child says the place they should be in school is Oak Ridge, then the place they should be in school is in Oak Ridge, because you could have children from a single family that perhaps some of them are being placed in Oak Ridge, others are not. But again, I'm trying to be creative in my thinking, but I'm not sure I'd want to draw a line in the sand
right. and I
firmer
think,
than just let the agency decide.
And I think sometimes they try to keep siblings together, but if it doesn't work, then you may have siblings that are split, and we may have a sibling placed in Oak Ridge in foster care while the other sibling remains in foster care in another school district. But then again, that's the agency's call. They did send out from the state a list of all the area DCS supervisors, so I have that list on my board, bulletin board, so if we get a child in from another county, they know to send me the educational passport, the schools know to ask for that comes in, so we kind of get an idea of some of the child's needs before we get that child in. And a lot of my foster families will contact me if they know they're getting a child. And so we try to start the ball rolling before they even get the child in their home.
Do we see a greater mobility within our system of those students who are in foster care or homeless than we do other students?
We don't see as much mobility with foster care children, because usually they come in, they're placed in a home, and they're there for the remainder of that year, sometimes longer than that, until whatever reason presented them being in foster care, those parents are able to gain that custody back, and they go back to the parents. As far as homeless, yes, we see mobility. With our homeless families. One thing that's helped us is that we've got the balanced calendar, so everybody's got the same services, so it's not like we're outweighing or putting more kids in one building than the other. They're kind of evenly distributed. And then again, it depends on where we can find housing for a lot of our homeless families too. So we're working with Torch. Joe Bruce and I work with Torch, arranging appointments with Andy to see about placement there. As far as transportation, we just had a family that we had tried to, that was homeless, that we had to get some housing for before the Thanksgiving holidays, and we were able to work that out. And once they come in Oak Ridge, they don't want to leave. They try to find some kind of housing, and they try to get that voucher where they can find housing in Oak Ridge.
Don't use that term.
Okay.
Sorry, only kidding. Mr. Eby.
Is this language that we have here straight from TSBA?
Yes. We have not had a policy like this before. Not saying we don't have foster children, but we have not had anything in writing.
Other questions or comments? Thank you, Dr. Henderson.
You're welcome.
First reading, Board Policy 6.505, Students in Foster Care. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Item G is a second reading of FY17 Budget Transfer Number 1, Transfer of Funds. Dr. Borges.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend the approval of the transfer of funds detailed on the attached information. These changes do not impact the overall appropriation approved by the city and requires no action of City Council.
You've heard the superintendent's recommendation. Do I hear a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Marshall, seconded by Ms. McClain. Dr. Borges.
No additional information. Karen, do you have anything to add for the second reading?
No, it's pretty much detailed for you, every single transaction of the transfer.
Questions? Motion is to approve FY17 budget transfer number one on a second reading, transfer of funds. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item H, facility alteration at Robertsville Middle School. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of the facility alteration to the Robertsville campus landscape.
Heard the superintendent's recommendation. Do I hear a motion?
Move for approval.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Eagle, seconded by Ms. McLean. Dr. Borchers.
As you can see from the attachment, we've got an award here from Lowe's to do some landscaping outside of Robertsville Middle School. So this is a good positive thing for them.
Questions or comments? Hearing none, motion for approval is facility alteration at Robertsville Middle School. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Next on the agenda, item I, textbook adoption committee for FY17 Tennessee adoption cycle 1, section B. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of the textbook adoption committee for FY17 Tennessee adoption cycle 1, section B.
Per the superintendent's recommendation, do I hear a motion?
Move for approval.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Eby, seconded by Ms. Marshall. Dr. Borchers.
As you can see from the attachment, this is CCTE only. And if you have any questions, Ms. Cross is here with us this evening.
Questions from the board? Hearing none, approval of textbook adoption committee for FY17, Tennessee Adoption Cycle 1, Section B. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next is the first reading, FY17 budget amendment number one, first reading. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend the approval of the FY17 budget amendment number one in the amount of $798,680, and you can see the attachment for the details.
For the superintendent's recommendation, do I hear a motion?
Move for approval.
Okay.
Motion made by Ms. Eagle, seconded by Ms. McLean. Karen or Dr. Borchers?
I'll turn it over to Karen, but as the board recalls, this is an item we talked about at our board retreat recently, and you're now seeing that before you for the first reading this evening. Ms. Gagliano, anything else to add?
Just in summary, this is an amendment, so this will affect the bottom line, the bottom total appropriation. So after year two readings, it will go to the city for two readings. The city has, we've had discussions that they are going to amend their budget as well. So to be prepared for when that happens, we're recommending that we go ahead and do this at this time. And a portion of this is increasing the contingency for using grant carryovers that weren't budgeted. And the larger portion is for mid-year spending of FY16 funds if the board elects to do so. It's just a contingency for that. And those items would be brought back to the board at that time.
And that's an important, at this point in time, an important statement that this, the largest portion of this money is basically a contingency amount that may or may not be spent
yes,
by the direction of the board.
Absolutely.
Mr. Eby.
Do we have any idea when City Council would be bringing their budget increase up?
I don't, but I've reminded them a couple of times to make sure that that we are notified so that we can include ours in the process.
I'll bring that up in my weekly meeting with Mark Watson as well.
Any other questions? On first reading, FY17 budget amendment number one, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
Is this one that and maybe it's not, that there's no way this would come up before we'd have a chance for a second reading, is there?
I don't think so, because they know that we have to go through two readings, and okay. Hopefully they've taken that into consideration.
Item K, resolution of support of public schools. I will turn this motion and this information over to Ms. Eagle, since she was the author of this resolution for consideration by the board. Ms. Eagle.
Well, as your TLN representative, I have been paying attention to what changes we expect to see coming in the next legislative session. And I have heard on good authority that vouchers are going to come up again. And it's not that we have any bias against private schools or any reluctance for parents who may choose that for whatever reason they choose, but to take funds away from public schools at a time when the BEP is not adequately funded, and we may want to change the word fully to adequately in this resolution. My feeling is that I have no problem competing with private schools if we're on a level playing field, if everybody has to go by the same rules, if everybody has to take the same tests, if everybody has to accept all students, regardless of income or disability or behavior or anything else. So this resolution simply asks that we not adopt vouchers until and unless all schools are on a level playing field and the BEP is adequately funded.
And this, to underline and put quotations around, is it is a primarily a funding issue from yes. Monies being diverted to, as you said, other school facilities in the private sector that would be tax money that would or should be designated for the public school sector. I mean, that's a key fact right there. And we better just be ready to tighten our seatbelts on this, because it is going to be an item. And if the current new nominee for Secretary of Education in the Trump cabinet is confirmed, she is a staunch supporter of school of choice and vouchers. So we better be up front and be ready to support and move forward with our support of public education. Mr. Eby.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Eagle and I attended the advocacy committee of the Chamber Board this past week, where we had Senator McNally, Senator Yeager, Representative Reagan, and Representative Calfee. That was it, right? This topic came up, and they said absolutely voucher will be something voted on. I was very pleased to hear Representative Calfee say he's dead against vouchers. He's the only one that said that.
Did the others say anything in regard to it?
No, not really. They didn't. I was pleased to hear Representative Calfee say that. One thing, and let me say that I think Ms. Eagle did an excellent job writing this. I think when we get done, and I'm not saying for this to pass it with this restriction, but soon as if we pass this immediately, I think we also ought to consider making a motion and sending it to City Council, Oak Ridge City Council, and our Anderson County Commission, because this is going to impact public school funds. It will impact the cities and the county, and I would think that they too would want to go on record to say that they don't think that we should be impacting it. So I think we ought to ask the city to pass a similar resolution. I wouldn't wait for them on this passage, but recommend that we send a letter and ask them to pass a similar resolution.
I think that's certainly an excellent idea, and I've had already conversations with members of both the Clinton and the Anderson County Board of Education to receive this for their discussion as well. So I think, we can come back to that in a minute. I would like to, looking at the fifth whereas, where it talks about the basic education program, it says, as is written now, the basic education program is not fully funded. I'd like to amend that and say the state's basic education program is not adequately funded.
Second.
Any discussion on that? Those in favor of that change signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Any other comments or